and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are also being kept at arm's length in association with Flowers Unlimited. While we are destined never to win again on the banks of the Thames as we snatched a defeat from the jaws of victory after Harry Wilson's last-minute winner gave Fulham the spoils. And it was also a game not without controversy as another tight VAR call went against us when Danny Welbeck's goal was ruled out by the Stockley Park Joy Stealers. That leaves us with just one win in the last 10 games and the natives are getting a little bit restless. Everton are our visitors this weekend, and a win would certainly silence the doubters. And also this week, we see the transfer window shut. It's been a quiet one so far, but will we see any movement before Monday's deadline? Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted, as always, to welcome back the Argus's chief sports writer, the one and only Mr. Brian Owen. Hello, Brian. How are you?
You mean the one and only sports writer? I think you got confused with your introduction there.
No, I'm very good, thank you. Chesney Hawks has got nothing on you, Brian.
Probably slightly better than when you were rushing off from Craven Cottage on Saturday and I was rushing, hoping to catch Fabian.
But you were looking a bit confused because you were a little bit late.
Well, I wasn't late. He was out early. And I have to stay and write my stuff up in the stand to get it sent. And normally we have a good 30 minutes plus before the manager comes in. And he came in very early. That was all explained in my own audio, which I did on Sunday.
Yes, I have listened to this audio and we recommend you seek it out.
It was a bit rambling, but yeah, that was explained. So that was probably my Boscali-like one misjudgment to spoil a good afternoon, I guess. But yeah. Yes, I'm fine to answer your question.
I was going to ask the question you were going to ask, Brian,
and they didn't see my hand up. So there you go. Okay.
Well, the thing is, actually, I mean, we'll talk about the game in a sec, but why was Fabian early?
I don't know.
I'm asking Brian because he saw him.
Well, I didn't see him. That was the point.
He did. But I did.
Yes. But the thing was, I think everybody said he was early and his interviews were quick. Maybe there weren't quite as many. I think they were just in a rush to get out there, to be honest. Yeah. Simple as that.
I mean, when he came in, he actually seemed, bearing in mind we'd just lost, he seemed relatively chipper, actually, which was...
You can't really tell whether we've won or lost. He seems the same. And I think...
I've seen him after defeats before, and he's been quite moody.
I think you can tell when they've lost, but you can't tell if they've won. Obviously, if you see all of them, you can. But if you sort of one off, I think he's quite level. He's quite calm and feet to the ground when they win. But he does. And I think it's more the broadcast reporters who get it. And I think I might mention this in my audio as well, because they're first. So by the time he comes to the written media, he's said things a few times. And the sting has been taken out a little bit. But he can be a little bit short and abrupt in his interviews even. With the broadcast media, which is quite strange because I think the obvious thing is it to be the other way around. You're smiley and chatty for the camera and not so when the cameras are off, but he almost does it the other way around. But yeah, but I think they just were in a hurry to get out of there.
Well, just in case they said something they regretted, I think. Yeah.
Well, we'll come to what you were going to ask in a minute, Brian, but let's get into the nuts and bolts of it. I mean, apart from the result, I mean, it wasn't the worst performance I've ever seen.
No, it wasn't. They didn't start so well, did they? But
no.
Once Ayari had hit that shot, and there were certain things that he did team-wise, Hertzler, which you could see, in a way, the point of. And there was just that nagging feeling throughout they need to get the second goal. And that was almost straight away after the 1-0 when there was the Kadioglu header, which... In a way, I think it was a little bit unlucky because if he just guided it back towards goal and it could have been going sort of anywhere, the defender was off balance, but somehow it just lobbed there where he could get to it. Various moments, chances and also chances to create chances.
Yeah, because I mean, the first 10 minutes, Fulham were very much in the ascendancy, and there was that chance for Raul where he was given the freedom of the penalty box to dance through. And it was actually a very, very good save by Bart in the end.
Yeah.
I was going to say it was a good. It was also a good save, but Bart's positioning. I think it was perfectly all right because he saved it, but he did leave an awful lot. I suppose it was probably because the Fulham striker was so close to him, he didn't leave his near post exposed. But that meant that left an awful lot of the rest of the goal exposed. And I actually think yes, it was a good save. You know, for as close as he was, but I think that Jimenez actually could have done a lot better. Thankfully,
Yeah,
he didn't. But you
as his
know.
teammate did later on.
Well, exactly.
But I mean, we didn't really. I mean, we're playing okay. We're moving the ball quite nicely, but we didn't really threaten the goal very much. And it was the game in microcosm was pretty much us getting the ball into decent positions and not doing anything with it. I mean, in fact, our first we didn't actually have a shot, let alone a shot on target. We didn't even have a shot until the 27th minute, and that actually was the goal.
Yeah, and
If I
then.
was going, yeah, you go first, Brian.
No, fine. No, go on, go ahead.
I was going to say, if I was a Fulham fan or the Fulham manager or anyone in Fulham, I would be appalled with their defending for that. You know, if it was us, you know, if the boot was on the other foot, I'm thinking you're mucking about, you're not being careful. You know, sometimes, like I say, it's always easy to be wise after the event and say stick your laces through it by all means. But they really were mucking about, and in fact, even when Iari managed to pick the ball up and then drift into the area, no one really challenged him. It was a good finish, and I've seen reports of criticizing the keeper, but I think the shot was just that good. But the build up to it was just poor.
Well, we're going to be criticizing goalkeepers today, and Leno is part and parcel of that because I can on this one. Because I mean, very full credit to Yassine Ayari on that one. I think he picked the ball up. I don't think the Fulham defenders were expecting him to shoot, and basically it just opened up for him, and it did actually take the goalkeeper by surprise, which is why he was slow getting to it. Because I think he was expecting a cross, but I mean he did get a hand to it, and you could argue that he could have done better.
But I always think with shot the goalkeepers, when you're trying to judge it, just try and remember as you saw it the first time, not watching it back, knowing what's going to happen. So, like you said, there was that slight surprise element, probably more so than when a player lines up a free kick from 25 yards out. But that was, I don't think anybody expected him to hit that. So, just I guess sort of try and remember what you were thinking when you saw it for the first time and what Leno might have been thinking, I suppose.
Well, I think that's exactly my point. I thought that, you know, first time I saw it, I thought Ayari's shot was just that good. Yes. All right. You also have to consider, you know, the balance of probabilities is that yes, Ayari is going to do something else other than shoot towards the near post. But also, even if he was expecting it, I suppose if he was expecting it to move towards it, but I'm going to give more credit to Ayari than blame the keeper here.
No, definitely.
What you think? Well, what even if Leno was in the right position, his balance would have been sort of, you know, even if it's on one foot or the other, even halfway on one foot or the other, that's enough to actually impede himself from getting to it in the first place. And the fact he got a hand to it, I don't think it's actually therefore enough to say, well, therefore, if you got a hand to it, you should have saved it. No, it was that good.
Ayari's have been a funny one, isn't it? I mean, he's had a weird run this year. I mean, obviously he started off as first choice. He's been dipping in and out recently. He had that run of form where he just couldn't hit the target at all. But he's one of those players we just don't really talk about. But he is very effective, and you know he's got what, 4 goals this season now.
What does Hertzler make of him? What does he say about him?
Well, he obviously really likes him, and he was the surprise from the
3 goals.
first season in Japan in that 2024 when he'd come back from, I think it was Blackburn, he was on loan at that last one, and he hadn't really done that much, and he was the one who really emerged under the new head coach. So, and I can remember asking him about what he'd done even after that 1-1 draw at Arsenal, I think probably the second away game with Hertzler. So he's obviously one who really appeals to what Hertzler wants in matches and every day in training, and it's felt like he's been like a key, like a regular in midfield, doesn't he? So he's the one. He's of all the players who've developed most or benefited most from Hertzler being the head coach, I think he's probably the one.
Yeah. I mean, because
The one.
last season he really was a surprise package because we weren't expecting to see him at all, really, were we?
Yeah, and he gets obviously he picks the ball up deep, and occasionally it doesn't come off, but he's happy to get the ball deep and play those passes, and he does get forward quite a lot. I mean, I don't know what his stats are, but it feels like he's had a lot of shots. There was one game, wasn't there, where he had I think 5 shots in the second half of very inaccuracy. I mean, maybe that's why they said shoot, but.
You cannot. I'll tell you, as a writer, Brian, you've got to be so careful about using the phrase, the two phrases, yasin ayari and shooting accuracy in the same sentence.
Well, he
I mean,
didn't.
he's not noted for. I mean, when he scores, I mean, some of them are absolute howitzers; they're beauties, but far too many end up in row Z.
Yeah. Well, it is 4 goals he's got this season, including one in the cup. So.
Okay, but what I'm actually also impressed about, and I think this is about sort of professionalism and loyalties, is the fact that he had an absolute howler against Man City. His two appalling drops is that even Hertzler said, enough's enough, because I think he was giving him a canary. So, and when Ayari came off in that game, he had the good grace, I say, to look crestfallen. He looked appalled at his behavior, his lack of judgment. But on the back of that, he's good enough that he's actually put it behind him. There are others who, when doing that sort of thing against Manchester City at the Etihad, could crumble.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Okay. Well, Brian, just to rewind a little bit. I mean, in the talk of the press room before the game, is when the team sheets came out, was the fact that Olivier Bascali was on it, and we couldn't quite work out what the formation was going to be. I mean, I thought it was going to go three at the back. It turns out that he was playing as a fullback in the place of Joel Veltman. Which I believe it was a plan to try and negate Harry Wilson.
I don't know that it was. That was just as I saw it. That when I looked, why have they done that, and who have they got playing wide? Maybe it's a clever player out wide. They thought put a clever defender, because I think Boscali is quite a clever player.
Yes.
To have Kevin against the pace of Calhanoglu on the other side. I mean, I thought it was fair. It was reasonably obvious when I went through the names. Because on our graphic that we put on our social media, we try and list the players in positional order rather than number order. And once I looked at the names, I thought it was fairly self-explanatory. But this sort of three at the back and four at the back, I think it's a little. I'm not so sure about that, because they do both. They'll just flick from one to the
Yeah.
other. So this sort of rigid, do they play three or do they play four? They seem to. They can do both within a game. And I think Boscelli. That wasn't him I spoke to about that, as De Kuyper, but those are players who can allow them to make those sort of transitions. And because obviously Calhanoglu got well forward.
Yeah, because one of the other key points that I noticed was that Jean-Paul Van Hekker seemed to be playing quite far forward as
Yeah.
well.
He usually
Yeah,
does. He
yeah.
often
More so
does. I
than
mean,
usual.
are you talking about sort of like last 10 minutes when it's, we're 1-0 down, or are you talking just generally?
Generally.
Even before that, I think he'll follow players as well. He'll go forward in a defensive mode. But yeah, he covers all the pitch, really, doesn't he, Van
Yeah.
Dijk?
Well, this
A
is it.
good.
I mean, the point we're making here is that although it's people assume that a central defender would stay in place and stay at the back and marshal everything and be the last line and also and so on and so forth, the nature of the way that the Albion plays is obviously let's suppose we're playing with the back four, there'll be one or two defensive midfield players. At the moment, Belieber, it has been Hinshelwood, it has been Ayari, and sometimes they'll swap around to effectively fill in when something like Van Hekker or Dunk will take the ball forward. So it's not exactly total football because it's very common these days, but there is enough of a fluidity which says that okay, if Van Hekker's going to go forward, then someone will slot in, usually Baliba in this case, to fill in to make sure that the four at the back is still there. And it's the only the thing about that is that it's about Van Hekker doing a job because he's on the ball, rather than Belabor taking over from him, saying, no, that's my job. There has to be, and there is, a fluidity where basically at some point, most players will do at least two or three other people's jobs, even if in order just to fill in for something like that. And so when I read people saying, why can't we have so-and-so playing there or so-and-so playing there? Modern football doesn't allow for that anymore. You have
Well, I
to
would
be
take
that
that.
fluid.
I'd take that, but I was just absolutely bricking it. There was going to be another case of the Fulham conundrum, where another player gets put into a completely random position, as has happened on several occasions. I take you back to Enoch Mwepu in Graham Potter's last game, to De Zerbi playing Van Hecker actually properly in midfield. I thought this was going to be another one of those where Bascali is going to be playing in goal.
Well, Bascali, when he's come on before, as a substitute, he's slotted in at left back. He did exactly that against Bournemouth, and in fact, bombed forward and nearly kind of, I suppose, crossed in the ball with a header.
He gives you good use of the ball. He's clever on the ball, and he's sort of a clever defender. And I thought we had a decent game apart from that moment. But what Al's saying there about that they'll come, like Van Hecker will come forward with the ball at his feet, but they'll also do that in a defensive way. You know, they'll come out and follow players, being man to man, and close them down. They don't just stay in that line of four. I remember we've seen it in the past with players like Colwell as well. So
yes.
Yeah, it's all a more complex game than the old line of four, two on front.
Absolutely, especially if, for instance, like, and this is what something like Danny Welbeck does, is he's supposedly the most forward player, but, you know, sometimes he does drop deep, he does drop in behind someone else going up in front of him, so they rotate a little bit. And the point about that is that the other team's equivalent of Danny Welbeck is the person that the likes of Van Hecker would follow around. So if that defender has dropped deep, and they want to do a little bit more man-to-manning. God, that sounds very Kemp Townish, doesn't it? If they want to do a bit more man-to-manning, then, you know, Van Hecker will follow them. And like I say, then another will go in and slot into their place until such time as Van Hecker decides, right, he's far too far back, I'm going back again.
Yeah. Okay. Well, after the goal, Brian, we were very much in the ascendancy, and this is the point where we really, really, really should have put the game to bed. And the chances continued to come. You alluded to it earlier, but there was the long ball forward from Lewis Dunk, which was controlled by Kerry Matoma. I actually think his first touch wasn't as good as it possibly could have been, because it took him slightly.
I thought it was excellent. I thought that's really harsh. It took him slightly
wide.
I think Matoma is one of those players who gets judged by really high standards, and that was
exactly
I was about to say that I thought it was a bit harsh that he was criticised for not playing the ball across towards Kadioglu, because I thought Kadioglu was a little bit behind him. I thought in the position he was fairly entitled to have a shot, but I think that talking about the touch is setting the bar.
But you're 100% right there, Brian. Because he is harshly judged, because we've seen him pull the ball out of the sky like a complete magician. I was watching it again just now before we came on air, and I just think that it just took him slightly wider than he would have liked, and that but he still managed to get the shot away. And actually, I mean, I think Ferdy was in two minds, because it looked like he was trying to head it back across the goal. But
you might be right. I'm turning the volume down on my phone and going to watch it back while we're chatting. But it wasn't something that occurred to me at the time. Oh, that's not very good.
When I first saw it, I thought, yes, the ball across to Kadioglu. Actually, to be fair, I think that probably the shot or the cross would have been of equal merit.
I don't think it deserved some of the criticism it got as being like a massive mistake or error judgment.
But the point is that the shot that Matoma did take was the right one, in as much as any save that the keeper did make, he pushed it out towards Kadioglu anyway.
We've seen Carew in that position many, many times and seen him finish. So
but he can't control it like a wizard every time. I mean, you know, like I say, that one we're thinking of against Chelsea. You know, perhaps he needed a defender to be right much, much closer to him to get the perfect control that you want out of him.
Yeah, to be fair, AD might be right on that with the touch. He might, you know, not absolutely.
But it also took the ball away from the defender. If he'd have actually got the touch he'd have wanted, I think the defender would have got him.
Or it would have been a penalty.
Well,
not sure. But I still think the saying he should have crossed it is slightly harsh. I think there were one other opportunity in the second half where you can justifiably criticise his quality of cross.
I mean, I see Carew get into that position, I want him to shoot. I want him to shoot.
Kadioglu's like 10 yards behind Matoma as the ball bounces in front of him, or whether he even knows he's there, I'm not sure.
Well, there's that, and there's also, I think he's wider than the goalpost itself as well. I actually thought when first viewing, he was closer to the centre of a goal. Then I saw the replay, I'm thinking, no, he's actually a bit further wide. Okay. So, and also, there's the embarrassing thing of if Matoma does cross and Kadioglu gets the ball, he's got an open goal, and you think, oh my God, this is so easy to mess up, and I really don't want to do this. Can someone else shoot for me?
It was unfortunate in that header, if it had gone pretty much anywhere else, the defender wasn't brilliantly balanced, and it just sat up in the one spot that he could get to head it before it crossed the line, because he was falling back over the line himself.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about all the chances here, the phrase that springs to mind here is it was a Graham Potter game, and as much as once Potter had actually got the teams actually sussed and sorted and playing well, I go back to that game against Manchester United that we lost in the 138th minute. We absolutely battered them that day and couldn't finish our bag of chips. I mean, and that was by far and away not
that's
only
very
time that
unlike
happened.
The Seagulls.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is there are a whole host of things where we've absolutely outplayed the opposition and then just been careless at the back. It's great to watch until such time as it doesn't go in.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, we did have so many chances to extend the lead, which we didn't take. And this continued into the second half. I mean, there was a Dunk's goal-bound header that cannoned off the back of Gomez. There was a gross attempted a shot after Lino found himself in no man's land.
Can I just cut in on your Dunk chance there? Now, that kind of thing has happened before. And I think it's probably one of those things that you, if you're the defending side, you're grateful that they do get under each other's feet. But surely somewhere down the line, and don't get me wrong, if you're Lewis Dunk, you're looking up in the air to the ball coming back down to you. You're not looking to see who's around you. But surely someone could actually, even if he thinks he's the only person going to scream your name. Which is, you know, don't we get taught in you know, year six football or whatever it is, call for the ball.
I think in this instance it was the ball was being recycled.
It was
basically just everyone was jostling, everyone was trying to get in there, and Dunk just managed to get his head to it, and it just unfortunate.
What I'm saying is that if Gomez didn't go for it because he heard a call from Dunk,
he was ducking.
But he shouldn't have gone for it in the first place. He actually did jump for it.
He was ducking.
No, he jumped for it.
I think he's jumping. I'm actually watching the game. This is quite a good idea. He's jumping at full extension when the ball hits him in the back. It's one of those as well, isn't it? Always think of these. We're sort of spending 5-10 minutes talking about something which took 1 second to happen. And it's a split-second decision. So I never know if we're being unfair or if these players are paid partly to make that decision in 1 second that takes us 5 minutes to discuss.
Of course, but
it's funny you should say that, bro.
Well, hang on a second, Andy. But if we're talking about it for 5 minutes, how long are the coaches talking about it?
Yeah. But no, I'm looking and I'm thinking about that Matoma cross, which was out of the reach of Welbeck, about the header by Matoma, which Welbeck touched wide of goal and away from Pascal Gross. I mean, just those.
That was just Matoma's radar being off when he was trying to find Welbeck.
You're harsh on him, aren't you?
No, it's just... Matoma didn't have a great game. You know, he's been great since he's come back in. And this was one of the ones where he wasn't so great.
What was it? Okay, in that case, what are you saying about it? Was it his approach play? Was it his defensive work? Was it his quality of his crossing? What was it that says it wasn't so
good? Well, it goes back to what Brian was saying earlier. His standards are just so high. It's just, and I mean, we're going to talk about expectation levels later on, but it's like, you know, he's for me, I mean, Carew's my favourite current Brighton player. He's just box office. He gets the ball, you expect something to happen, he's exciting. And, you know, he was trying to do stuff and it's things that just weren't quite coming off, which we've seen come off several times before. And, you know, it was still
prominent.
It was still a decent enough performance, but it's by his standards, we kind of expect slightly better sometimes.
What would you call then an adequate or good performance from Carey? What would he have to do? I guess let's be fair and say he's playing for 80 minutes and gets subbed off after, because let's face it, running like a dervish for 90 minutes is going to kill him. So what would you expect? What are you expecting from him that would actually say, yeah, I thought Carey had a good game?
Brian?
Oh, sorry.
I'm asking you because you're the one criticising.
Well, I mean, basically, I sorry, I gave you a medicine.
I can answer that. I don't mind answering.
No, go on then, Brian.
I think,
Hang on, one at a time. Brian, I want Brian to save AD first and then AD to tell.
Partly, I would say he was prominent, he was available, and he was involved in all these things, which is the first thing. Then I would say, so very easily, that Kalioglu header could have found that part of the net that the off-balance defender wasn't covering, that Welbeck could have turned home that cross, and then that 1 centimetre offside might not have been offside, and that would have been an absolutely genius assist. The cross that he delivered was poor, and I had a Japanese reporter sitting next to me who groaned when he delivered that cross. But in general terms, I sort of think with Mitoma, if he puts in a couple of decent balls, goes on a couple of decent runs, does his defensive work, which he always does as well, cuts inside and finds some nice passes or makes room for whoever's outside, and that's seen as a quiet game by Mitoma, when actually it is a thoroughly efficient and decent game. That's sort of in more general terms. But I'm looking at some of those instances, he could have easily had 3 very good assists in that game.
So I mean, but if we're going to use the same metric at which we criticise Minte for him, his final ball not always being the correct choice, we've got to judge Carew by that. And this was one of those games where sometimes it just didn't. The ball just wasn't finding the target. It was just going slightly off kilter here and there.
When you say the target, you mean a defender? An attacker who's in the box.
Finding the right pass. And Carew, you know, he's like I said, his standards are so high. You kind of want that to happen. And, you know, he didn't have a bad game by comparison, but it was just like you know, sometimes like you want those passes. You know, the classic example was that ball across to Welbeck, where it could have been slightly better. There's a few instances in the first half where he was getting himself to the byline, but he just couldn't pull it across. I think he's like I said, high standards. It's expectation.
I think he affects the way other teams play as well, though. I think there's always that he affects how they defend and how they set up and how wary they are. And he wasn't the only one. There was that one Pascal Gross in the first half where Leno tried to keep the ball in and gifted it to Gross, and he could have picked. He did have one yellow shirt right in front of goal and a couple of others in the box, and he wasn't able to pick anybody out. And then he produced that really good cross for Welbeck later, didn't he? So there was, and that chance we just mentioned was from across, I think, a corner. He didn't deliver particularly well. So he wasn't the only one who had mixed.
What have you made of Gross since he came back, Brian?
Fine. He seemed, I mean, he was more like the original Pascal Gross role on this occasion, that sort of number 10 role. But I just think he came in at a nice time, I suppose, at home to Burnley, but he just lifted so much about the club, and he came in quicker than I thought he would. I never thought he would play in that game against Burnley. Generally, I think with him, he'll have his highlight moments, but also he's a little bit like Jack Inchwood can become, in that making others a little bit better or filling in gaps or playing little passes. I noticed, like at Man City, he was just constantly funneling across one side to the other, looking for spaces. And So, but I've been fairly impressed with him, and fairly impressed with the effect he's had.
I'm going to say it's just like he's never been away. I thought he slotted in as though he was at home. And let's face it, we haven't had too many players who've made a debut with us, and you know, look like they're so totally at home. Now, obviously, he'd spent 7 of the previous 8 years with us anyway, but he'd obviously gone to Germany to, you know, to play in the Dortmund style, asking probably not a massive gear crunch from what he was asked to do here compared to what he was asked to do there. So in that sense, he can easily hit the ground running. I think probably all it is that once he gets an assist or gets a goal, then, you know, even just against Bournemouth, he did a gross turn and the place went bananas.
Yeah.
That was a real pantomime moment. It was fantastic. And so he is clearly a loved person. I don't think he's lost anything. Certainly not any pace.
There is something that I would like him to stop doing, though.
What's that?
Taking all the corners. Our corners were getting really good. And Ferdy takes an absolute brilliant corner, gets it right underneath the crossbar. And we're back to Pascal Gross taking up corners when it wasn't worth us having one.
You are in kind of hypercritical mode, but breaking news, AD, they're human.
I'm just saying that Ferdy's corners have been absolutely fantastic.
Can we score from any?
Well, he pretty much always has, actually.
Yeah, I know. No, I mean, like I say, it's those fine margins, the difference between, you know, I mean, to be honest, most of the chances we missed weren't sitters. I mean, the header was, you know, it was straight at Leno and he tipped it over the bar. You know, I think he even winked at the photographers for that one. And yes, the chances coming in, they're all there. Okay. Another day, we could have stuck four or five past them, but we didn't. It doesn't actually affect the fact that as to how good or bad we were, and you're only ever going to get judged on the number of goals we score. And if you're talking about one win in 10, yeah, it looks horrific. But, you know, Graham Potter, then he lost six games in a row for us and then went on a maniac supermarket, you know, spree. You know, beating Arsenal, beating Manchester United at times where we really, you know, weren't going to do that. It's just the nature of football that we've got at this club, that these things happen. And I don't think it's the concern that the natives, as you said, getting restless. Yeah,
we'll
because
come to
the
that.
The stats themselves don't necessarily look great. But it's not for the want of trying, and it's not as though we're playing badly. For a lot of that game, we have Fulham on toast, but it means nothing if you don't stick the ball away. And what does that mean then? Right, blame the manager because Welbeck missed a sitter.
Let's talk about putting the ball away and the joy stealers at Stockley Park.
Right.
I'm still fuming about this, Brian.
On the one respect, I suppose, offside is offside, and wherever you draw a dividing line, there will always be one side of it is on and one is the off. But it just doesn't feel like what offside is all about.
Can I take this back to we're talking technicalities here, because the notion of it is supposed to be you draw the line at the part of the body where the boundary between the part of the body where you can score and you can't. So, you know, to wit, we're talking about the arm here. Now, if you rewind about three years ago, where Carew got an offside goal at Spurs. Now, it hit him on the sleeve, and just at the beginning of that season, the law had changed from sleeve to level with the armpit. Okay, right, that's nominal. That you can see now that is therefore handball. But then when you see the graphic of the line that they drew for Danny Welbeck, you can see that actually it's not the armpit, it is the sleeve. So as you are, the question you're asking here, Brian, is, okay, well, where is the offside line? And if the offside line is now the end of the sleeve, then yes, it's possible he was offside. But if it's not, and it's back a little bit further, i.e. where the armpit was, and the graphic did not show it as being where the armpit is, if there's something else that we're missing, then fine. But the graphic, the one that is actually telling us what is the scenario here, the graphic or the interpretation of the graphic was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, just everything that I've sort of from watching football for many years, that just doesn't look offside. You just feel that is not offside.
Wasn't offside, Brian, and VAR got it horribly wrong. I mean, I'm looking at, like, I mean, we've already seen identical instances this season with Florian Wirtz, actually at Craven Cottage as well, and with Semenyo against Liverpool, where it has been identical amount of arm being showed, and there's a big green thing at the bottom that says onside. So what's the difference?
Yeah, and obviously it now takes away. I mean, that would have been that's not just a moment, is it? That would have been remembered for years, and sell it. You would have looked back on that moment in the way that you look back on that Lewis Dunk goal at Craven Cottage.
I mean, that's the point. If we've got it where, and it's because it's now the semi-automatic. I have no idea what semi-automatic therefore means, because let's face it, previously it was the, for want of a better term, manual ones. And if we go back again a couple of years to Selhurst Park, where they draw the lines on the pitch for themselves, you know, in that instance, there was a goal that we scored. It was given offside and they drew the line on the wrong defender. So, you know, the offside is supposed to work. And this is something you said last week, AD, about, you know, offside is a, it's not down to interpretation. It's down to the stated law, but it's about the stated law. We realize it's the stated law being applied properly.
And this the stated law is something you can't score a goal with, which is the part of the body that was over, which was being shown as offside. Yeah. It was a perfectly good goal. VAR have got it wrong. I mean, Fabian in the press conference afterwards, Brian, he was actually saying, well, you know, when did they stop it from? What was the frame rate?
Yeah.
You know, a split second earlier, it's going to be a completely different image. I've said this 1,000 times before. Unfortunately, as much as I hate it, VAR is still here to stay. So, but the current laws of the game were not designed to be micromanaged in this way. The offside rule was there to stop goal hanging. It was, you know, I mean, I don't want to go to this the clear daylight thing that Wenger's suggesting, but the player has to be gaining a clear advantage for it to be offside. And,
well, he did,
you know,
to be fair, he did gain a clear advantage because he stuck the ball away. But the point is that, okay, what is, I mean, there has to be a dividing line as to what is and what isn't offside. And even if you actually had it where you had the line itself is thickened, that if two people, you know, are within this particular line, then you're still okay. Then even then, that plus 1 millimetre is going to be a dividing line that drives people around the twist. So,
well, we had that one a few years ago, didn't we? Where Carew's heel was like a judge to be offside. He was running in the different direction.
Yeah.
But again, he gained an advantage because he stuck the ball away.
Yeah, okay. Well, unfortunately, we can't argue this goal to stand, unfortunately, because it did get chalked off incorrectly. And they say these things level themselves out, so we'll see. But let's look at some positives. We'll talk about Harry Wilson in a minute.
Sorry, just one quick thing. It's just something that Brian mentioned in his blogs and what have you, was he was saying that, well, the Premier League have just turned around and said, well, offside is offside. Is that the way that they're actually, you know, in your role as a journalist, is that what your understanding is that, you know, there is no mitigation, that nothing can be changed, that, you know, offside is an absolute?
No, all I'm saying is if there's a line there, what you just said, you're either going to be one side or the other. And I don't know how it works in the VAR room, if they've just got something on the screen saying this is offside, and then it's hard to say it isn't. But it's almost like if a ball's gone over the line, isn't it? It's a similar one to that. Just quickly on this, I thought Michael Oliver was really good, by the way, as a referee, apart from the VAR. But I thought generally his refereeing was pretty good.
There's one other decision he got wrong, but we'll come to that in a minute. But what I do want to talk about, and we're gonna talk about the positives, and that was the new signing that we had that played in this game called Carlos Baleba.
Yeah, like the old days, wasn't it? Very, very. Just what he used to do, and obviously the crowd enjoyed it and showed their appreciation. Actually, that was one of those moments where he tracked back. There was a really quick Fulham counter attack, and he got back. I think it might have been that Kevin who was racing away, who's pretty quick, and he got back and just sort of forced him off the ball and won it back. And that was actually one moment where I mentioned Michael Oliver because he was the one who was up with him.
Yeah. It was like he'd borrowed one of Rowan Ince's telescopic legs.
Yeah, that's a player who appealed to a certain manager, isn't it? Did well under one manager, but yeah, he was back to his best for 81 minutes.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, it was one of those, I mean, I don't know whether what the situation is with him lasting 90 minutes, but I didn't see him particularly tiring. And I get that he wants to, like, shore it up, but it was just frustrating.
Yeah, I think the Milner, sending Milner on for the later stages of the game is a good theory, should really work. And he might not have been looking tired, Belaba, but maybe you want to take him off before he looks tired, not wait for him to look tired for a few minutes and then take him off. But I don't think the putting Belaba, the Milner on to shore up a win has really worked. It might be good theory, but in practice it hasn't worked. And looking back at games, he's almost been better at changing games and helping them win matches.
Yeah.
So, it was obviously unpopular. It sounded like it was being booed from where we were sitting in the press box, but I had to make 100% sure. I did put in my live report. It sounds very much like that, and obviously it transpires that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, there was a lot of disappointment about it, but okay, well, it happened. And one of the other players that came on was Babis Kostoulas. This is a decision where I actually think that Oliver did get wrong. I mean, I'm not arguing it was a free kick, but it certainly was not a booking. But it was, I think Babby showed his inexperience there. I don't think he needed to make that tackle. I mean, it was him that lost the ball in the first place, and he was trying to make up for it. And
I think where sometimes kids actually forget that football is a team game, that yes, you've lost it, but then one of your teammates will get it back. It's
and there
not
was
incumbent
and there was a
you.
Covering defender coming towards the ball. So he did, it's a challenge he didn't need to make, and gifting Fulham a chance, particularly at the moment in the form that Harry Wilson's in at that particular moment in at that juncture. I still think Bart should have saved. I think his positioning was all wrong for the free kick, but it was frustrating.
It was a decent hit. I mean, he belted it hard enough. And, like I say, I think he was starting. It's not as though he started off in the wrong position. He was actually going the other way. So, again, a bit like Aussie's chops Leno in goal for Fulham for the first goal.
Yeah, but
off balance.
Ayari surprised Leno. This was no surprise. Everybody knew what was going to happen. And it was like I think he was just like slightly too far to one side, to the wrong side.
I think, wasn't he quite central? He was either going to go one corner or the other.
Yeah.
Maybe where Verbruggen was tempted Wilson to go for that corner rather than the over the wall. Because I think if you looked at that setup, a still of him about to go to the free kick, you would think it would be the curler over the wall onto the other side. So maybe his position dictated where the free kick went.
Okay. Okay, well, I mean, he did get a hand to it. It's when you see that, you kind of like think, well, I mean, I think
he hit it well enough, and it was actually always going to be difficult to save. That's the point. Even if it hits your hand, I mean, it's just because a keeper gets a hand to it does not mean to say he's going to knock it around the post. Sometimes it's just hit too hard, too well, and your hand is not strong enough.
Okay. I think the faces said a lot about that after the goal went in. Here's some one or two defenders. I also think goalkeepers are judged more seriously than they used to be. I think going back when I was a kid, for example, if that had gone in, you'd just be saying, what a fantastic free kick. Or if you watched a match of the day from the 80s or so, then you'd say it would be all about great free kick. Whereas now I think we do criticise goalkeepers more than we used to.
Well, I mean, on your audio, Brian, you said, like, look at the goal and think of it the first time you saw it. The first time I saw it, I thought he should have saved it. And then I watched it back again, and I still think he should have saved it.
So. Yeah, I did. Initially, I put in my live blog, I thought, are you being... I might be a bit harsh here, but I think he probably should have saved that. And then when you look back, he should have done. Whereas the Leno,
I could see that goal anyway, Brian. No, I had a great big pillar in the way.
Oh, right. Well, we have people standing up in front of us. I mean, Fulham is the new Goodison Park in terms of...
You did enjoy the moaning.
Oh, there was a lot of... I mean, the Fulham supporters, obviously, they would have had a great evening, a great weekend. But from about 3:20 till about whatever time that goal was scored, they didn't enjoy it at all. It was they were really critical of their team. And I just think that, again, emphasises that it was a decent Brighton performance. I think they actually played some good football, attractive football at times. I know that's probably a controversial opinion, but
Bryant play good football?
The gravity is better at Craven Cottage than it is elsewhere in the country, I believe.
Well, one of the YouTube, there's lots of these YouTube things, these fan things where they've got these weird graphics behind them. I mean, the first one I saw was Fulham fans going, "How on earth did we win that?" Which I think probably sums up and actually agrees with the point that you two were making about what you could hear around you.
Yeah. I actually saw a load of Palace fans saying, "How the hell are they ruled that out?" So you know that for the penalty for Welbeck's goal. But you know, it's just a shame that we can't win there in the Premier League because it's such a nice place to go. I mean, I had probably what was the best pint of Guinness I've had in this country on Saturday.
On the river.
It's terrible.
It should be, and it used to be, didn't it? It almost used to be in the Championship. No matter how poorly Brighton played, they would win, and no matter how well Fulham played. And now it's almost the other way around.
I know. I remember Adrian Colunga scoring there, and Solly March under Nathan Jones.
But let's face it, we are talking about the. I mean, if you're really talking about a great memory for Fulham for the last in the 21st century, it has to be that game at New Year. When they absolutely battered us for about 70 minutes, we get a penalty and score it. Because this was in the days when Stockdale would save every penalty that came his way. We then scored ours. And then 2 minutes later, Dunk came up. And I think it was probably fair to say that the Putney end was about to take off.
It was mad. And Anthony Knockhart doing a full on jumping on top of the pile.
Of that bundle after the game, do you know the one after the goal? Sorry, do you know what worried me the most? It's just that Shane Duffy was the last one to get onto that bundle and he went flying with his flop on there.
Okay, moving swiftly on, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited, and Valentine's Day is coming up, Alan.
Thick and fast. It's only about 18 days to go, so that'll be the 14th of February. Head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. They have a vast array of flowers for all your loved ones, and I don't even include Triffids for Michael Oliver. Flowers Unlimited, brighton.co.uk. There's all kinds of goodies that they can serve for you, especially for loved ones. Flowers especially. If you're an Albion season ticket holder, do tell them that because you'll get a 20% discount. But you can get champagne, you can get chocolates, you can get all kind of things that says love you, don't love you, sorry, not sorry, and all parts in between. So head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. And thanks very much, as ever, to Dave Costa for sponsors. And I would say this, we do know that this sponsorship is working because they told us that some people are phoning them up, ordering flowers, having heard us on the Albion Raw. So also, if you have heard about the offer that they do for all Albion season ticket holders and you heard it here, do let them know. That'd be fantastic.
I'm Dean Gallagher, or Brighton, Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world, as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Now, Alan.
Hello.
Do you fancy a day trip?
To Bangor?
No, we're having a day out next Wednesday, aren't we?
We're going to jolly old London. We're off to the smoke. Yeah, the Seagulls over London have kindly invited us. I mean, if anyone can hear, by the way, the bottom of the barrel being scraped, that's us. yes, they've invited us up there. Now, I've been to a Seagulls over London thing, but that was easily 25, 30 years ago. This is something that was set up by Paul Welsh. And they have various luminaries from the Albion alumni who've gone up there. I mean, everyone pretty much from the board, ex-players, people associated with the club, people associated with the associations of the club. But this time round, they've invited us. We'll be going up there to give a talk. It's open to all members of Seagulls Over London. If you're not, just go to seagullsoverlondon.com. And apply for membership there. I'm not 100% sure of their rules, but if you go onto the website, then they'll let you know what it is that you've got to do to go to be there. All I would say is that if you do fancy coming, it's Wednesday, February the 4th. It's a pub very close to Waterloo Station. I will be singing Ray Davies, Like It or Lump It. And we're very much looking forward to it. I think we're going to give a talk about the history of the Albion Roar and of Radio Reverb. I'm probably going to have a mini rant about the parlous state of local radio in this country. But also we're going to have a damn good time with those people who are going to come along. Yeah. Our good friend Russell Guyver is going to be our host. And we're so looking forward to it.
Indeed, it's going to be fun, and there'll be a live recording of the of next week's show.
Yeah, that should be interesting. Yeah.
Indeed. So, actually, funny enough, that pub where I had that pint of Guinness out was actually Paul Welsh's favourite pub in London, apparently. So
which one? What was it called?
I'm not telling you. So
that's not very nice. I assume it was around the Putney way.
I'll tell you afterwards. It's a secret. Okay, Brian. You're going to be busy on Monday, or you might not be busy on Monday, as the transfer window closes. Now, there was a time when you were in the studio one time when the window was closing and constantly checking your phone back in the day we recorded this live.
Well, it was Tarek Lamptey, wasn't it? It was when Tarek Lamptey signed.
It was.
It was when you were down in Kemp Town. I'm literally trying to type now. Obviously, you're not live. I'm literally trying to type now the confirmation of Eagles' return from West Ham, which obviously opens doors which may have been walked through by the time people hear this. But it will be busy, but we'll be busy writing about things happening or things not happening. I will be doing a live blog on our website and bits and pieces, so you can always look out there for. I'll try and include some comment and chat rather than just press releases. But I think it feels like the defence is sort of taking shape now in terms of allowing Diego Coppola what he really wants, which is first team football, especially in a World Cup year, but at the same time providing Hertzler with his four defenders, which Brighton really want. So obviously Igor coming back from West Ham, and he can play that left-sided defensive role, and we'd expect young players to go out on loan. I mean, Joe Knight almost went out, didn't he, on the last deadline. Charlie Tasker, they were talking about going out on loan. So I think those are the sort of things looking for. I know there's been more transfer talk about defenders, and there is a
Lewis Dunk.
That was a bizarre one today, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. I wasn't worried about that.
Sorry, I wasn't worried. When I first saw it as a breaking news thing on Sky Sports this morning, so we're recording this on Tuesday the 27th, I saw that and I'm thinking, I've got to look at the date here. And you know, it's an old cliche. I had to check if it was April the 1st. It was a genuine thing of, hang on, is it? No. What on earth made them think that they could go for him?
They checked to see if he was born in Brighton. That's what they did. Because they were linked with Jack Hinshelwood earlier in the winter.
Were they?
Yeah, they were, but I don't know if they just wonder if Brighton are looking at their next. Who knows? But I think it was interest. I was told to describe it as interest.
Sky Sports said they rebuffed an offer.
There's another word I would use for it, and I can't use it on the radio. But what we do know, one player that has gone, which I am a bit sad about, Brian, because it's a player that every time he did play, which was very, very rarely, he never let us down, and he always put in a shift, and I really enjoyed watching him. But his face just never really seemed to fit, and that is, of course, Jeremy Sarmiento.
Yeah, we hardly saw him, did we? I mean, he set that goal up for Mitoma, he set the goal up for Evan Ferguson. I think he had most of his chances of the managers who were here under De Zerbi. And I remember him coming back from a really decent Copa America with Ecuador in the summer of 2024. And Fabian Hertzler gave him the opportunity to have a bit of time off like the international would do. And he said, no, I'm going to come up to Tokyo and show what I can do. And he played reasonably well in that massive squad of really sort of fast, exciting players. Like, that was where Ayari first came in, and Koji Dubry and Valentin Barco, and that sort of jet squad that they had. And I spoke to him in Tokyo after that game against Kashima Antlers, and he said, you know, I was given the option of a holiday, but I wanted to come, show what I can do, and listen to that. And I had a good Copa America. And then when he wasn't retained in the squad, I think that was probably the beginning of the end for him in terms of being a Brighton player, but he's obviously got a really good track record at the top end of the Championship. A bit like, I remember Oliver Norwood used to be a specialist in promotions, didn't he?
And three promotions in a row, wasn't it?
Well, Sarmiento could do that. He could do that.
Well, Borough are looking very well placed, actually, aren't they? But it's a bit of a weird one because it's a loan with an obligation to buy. I believe the fee's only about 3.2 million, I believe.
I don't know. I mean, there are sometimes these things happen. Maybe it's because, if you remember, Knockhart went on loan when Fulham were in the Championship, and then they did the deal when they were a Premier League club. So maybe it's to do with the finances and when they pay. I don't really know. I know that if he'd gone to Birmingham, he couldn't have gone on loan there because they seem to be at the forefront at one point. But it might be because of that. I'm sure it's just a way of a practicality. In effect, it will end up being a permanent move. But maybe it's because like the Knockhart one where he went on loan when they were in the Championship and he became permanent when they were in the Premier League.
There's been a few weird transfers. I was just been reading before we came on air about the Tammy Abraham transfer from Roma to Besiktas, and now he's gone to Aston Villa all in the same day.
I'd sort of forgotten he was at Roma with all the following what Ferguson's up to, and it's just the practicalities of it, isn't it? But Sarmiento, not quite at the level that they needed, wasn't far off, but not quite there. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, another one of those similar sort of boat, I guess, is Tommy Watson. He's being linked with a loan move. Are you hearing anything on destinations?
No, just what I know he's been linked with some clubs, but he probably needs to be playing, doesn't he? That move has really been quite strange for him, especially when you look at how Sunderland have gone. I spoke to him at Old Trafford in that week when it looked like he might be making a bit of a breakthrough, and he said he had no regrets long term about the move, and that might prove to be right. It's only half a season into what is a longer term career choice, so he thinks this is the place for him and the way that Brighton play. But it feels like it's just fitness, illness, injury, just not being able to train for a full week. Fabian Hurston saying that last week at one point.
It's like growing pains to me.
Well, I mean, how long did it take Kostoulas? I mean, he wasn't even, him and Tsimas weren't even training with the squad when we were in Spain, and I went over there to see those two friendlies and naively put out, oh, this could be a chance to see the two Greek boys in action. They weren't even training with the squad. They were doing their own fitness plans. So if that's going to protect them and make them fit and strong enough, then fine. But yeah, Watson, if he's ready to be playing games, then it could make sense. But he needs to be ready. Maybe they'll want to keep him close and under, within in-house and under close, sort of keep a close eye on what he's doing here. I'm not sure. I mean, there is room for another left winger.
I mean, it's another classic example, though, isn't it? I mean, of seeing the player as a commodity and not a human being. And you know, he's a young lad moving south for the first time. Obviously, he speaks a different language. He speaks Macam, but it's like it's. You know, I believe there has been issues with homesickness to a certain degree, and you know, there's other things that happen off the pitch that affect them, and obviously not being given necessarily the opportunities that he might have wanted hasn't helped. But you know, he hasn't even been playing with the 21, so to get.
But how many of our players? How many of our players these days, probably in the last 5 years, especially the youngsters, have come through and immediately made an impact?
Yeah, I mean,
it just doesn't happen.
No, I mean, Alexis McAllister had really tough times earlier on. There's been members of the women's team, including the goalkeeper, who's had that. You're right, they are. Hertzler made a sort of reference to Yankuba Minte and saying, remember, they're human beings. And I asked him as he had something going on, and he didn't really expand on it. But yeah, they are young human beings, a long way from home, I guess. I mean, it's not. Obviously, coming from Sunderland is not like coming from South America, but it's still a long way. It's still a different part of the world. So, there is so many players aren't sort of left now in like they might have been in previous decades. There is so much care and player liaison and support off the field for the players. So I'm sure he's been looked after in a good way, and others are. And if they're having to wait, there's no doubt a good reason for it.
Hmm. Okay, well, there's bound to be lots more rumours and stuff going on over the next week, but we'll tell you all about that next week, because that is all we've got time for, folks. Thank you so much, as ever, to Brian Owen. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you again very soon. Cheers. Bye.
How can you tell me how much you miss me? When the last time I saw you, you wouldn't even kiss me. That rich guy you've been seeing must have put you down. So welcome back, baby, to the poor side of town. To him, you were nothing but a little plaything. Not much more than an overnight fling. To me, you were the greatest thing this boy had ever found. And girl, it's hard to find nice things on the poor side of town. I can't blame you for trying. I'm trying to make it too. I've got one little hang up, baby. I just can't make it without you. So tell me, are you gonna stay now? Will you stand by me, girl, all the way now? With you by my side, they can't keep us down. Together we can make it, baby, from the poor side of town. Can't keep us down. Together we can make it, baby, from the poor side of town.